96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Are you a survivor of sexual assault? Well, many women and even some men are, but what is life like for those who are still dealing with the severe trauma of such a highly personal and invasive crime? Well, tonight we examine the many issues survivors deal with as we mark Sexual Assault Awareness Month. My guests are Indira Henard, Executive Director of the D.C. Rape Crisis Center, Amina McWhirter, founder of Love by the Handles, and Savannah Brown with Black Women's Blueprint. Lines are open if you have a question, if you have a comment, if you are looking for resources, either for yourself or someone that you care about who is a survivor of sexual assault. Our guests are here to help. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Ladies, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Let me start with Amina. Amina, can you give me a working definition of what sexual assault is?
Well, sexual assault really is about an individual who has power over you and affecting your way of life from a physical, sexual perspective that is not of your choice. And even when it comes to young individuals, you know, we talk about that as far as, you know, it doesn't matter if it's a woman, a man, or a child. But even when it comes to me being a survivor and at 6 years old being a victim of sexual molestation and sexual assault, this is a serious topic. And it is about power and control from even a sexual perspective.
Mm-hmm. Indira, we've often heard of late about sexual assault. Mm-hmm. But your organization is the D.C. Rape Crisis Center. Why are we hearing less about the word rape and more about sexual assault? Is there a difference?
Well, I think that we need to understand that sexual violence happens on a continuum and it happens within a paradigm. The definition of sexual violence has been expanded. So sexual violence is any unwanted sexual contact. It can be a form of sexual harassment. It can be what we know to be true in terms of a penetration in terms of a sexual assault. It can be a groping. It can be a number of things. Sexual violence and rape are sometimes used interchangeably, depending on the type of violence that has occurred.
But why are we hearing less about the word RAPE?
Well, I mean, I think in this national climate, there's a lot of conversation going on around sexual harassment. You know, sometimes folks use sexual violence again to talk about the continuum of sexual violence. And then, you know, it really just depends on what the conversation is. But I think this new climate that we are engaging in, we are hearing a lot about sexual assault, sexual harassment. But what we need to remember is everything happens on a continuum.
Mm-hmm. Savannah, from your perspective, why is it so important that we continue to raise awareness, not only for survivors and loved ones, but those who may not have any direct or even indirect experience with this issue?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with everything that Amina and Indira have said. And I think it's really, really important to just drive home that idea of what Indira was speaking about, the continuum of violence. And one of those is because sexual violence is so prevalent, and it's specifically so prevalent in Black communities. We know that 60% of Black women and girls experience rape and sexual assault before the age of 18. And so everyone in the community knows someone who is a survivor. Whether or not they've disclosed to you that they're a survivor, we all know someone who was a survivor, and so it's really, really prevalent, and it's something that we need to continue to raise awareness about. I think there's also a lack of understanding about what consent is. So consent 101 education, right, that consent is a mutual agreement based on a shared desire for specific sexual activity. It's ongoing verbal interaction, taken one step at a time. It should be expressed in an honest and enthusiastic yes. So those ideas, right, consent 101, the continuum of sexual violence, the definition of sexual assault, all of those are so, so heavily important because sexual violence is so prevalent in our community and it's experienced at high rates.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight we are examining the issues surrounding Sexual Assault Awareness Month. If you are looking for resources, if you know someone who needs resources, if you are a survivor of sexual assault, give us a call. We have people in studio on the phone who are here to help get you through this kind of horrific experience. Lines are open again at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Desiree, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Desiree. What's on your mind?
Hi. So I wanted to say that many times, you know, coming from a Christian background, women are taught or they think that they have done something to invite sexual assault, either the way they dress or you knew that guy was like that, you shouldn't have been in that room or whatever, whatever. And I have gone to church all my life. I'm 41 years old, been going to church all my life. It wasn't until I was 35 years old that on my own, while doing my own study of the Bible, that I had heard of the rape of Dinah. And that's in Genesis. And I feel like that would have empowered me to know that that there was nothing wrong with what I did, that the sin was on the predator and not the victim. And I feel like in my youth, had I known that, I would have reached out and spoke out. But I was just kind of always taught that I brought some type of shame on myself.
That's a really interesting point. Indira, please. Thank you for calling, Desiree.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing, Desiree. You know, what I want to say is that the church has a lot of work to do regarding talking about sexual violence. Historically and culturally, specifically within the African American church, sexual violence has been a taboo. And so what we know to be true is that there are plenty of examples in the Bible as it relates to sexual violence. You had mentioned one specifically, and that is absolutely correct. There's another one, the rape of Tamar. So I think in this new climate, we have to begin to challenge our faith-based institutions to really begin to talk about these taboo issues from the pulpit. The D.C. Rape Crisis Center on April 19th, we're going to be holding a Twitter chat on Me Too and the role of the church and really breaking down the silence on these issues. And so what I would offer to you is I'm so sorry that you weren't able to get the support that you need, and you bring up a really valid point in terms of the church, because what happens is when folks don't get the support they need, sometimes they fall out of love with religion. They fall out of love with the church mm-hmm. because the church is now part of their perpetration. The church now is a place that has done harm to them. And so, again, we need to do better and we need to hold our faith-based institutions accountable.
Savannah, you wanted to add something to that.
Absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly with Indra, and thank you so much, Desiree, for sharing and bringing this issue to the floor. This is really, really big, and something that we've done at Black Women's Blueprint is that we've partnered with churches and have these conversations. Another organization, the Children of Kambahi Collective, does work on sexual abuse within Black churches and preventing and ending it. And something that we found is at our Black Women's Truth and Reconciliation Commission, a pastor from the Riverside Church actually issued an apology on behalf of the church and black churches in particular, because victim blaming is so prevalent. And one of the reasons that people blame the victim or the survivor is to distance themselves, right, from the incident of sexual assault or sexual violence or rape culture, right? So it's really a conversation about accountability and then what kind of reconciliation can take place after an apology has been issued. But also, what are the paths outside of the path to forgiveness? Forgiveness is definitely an option, but what are the paths for reconciling issues of rape and sexual assault and sexual violence within Black church communities, and how can we make sure that our churches are held accountable for those instances?
Amina.
One other thing I want to add is that it's very important, especially when we're dealing with the church and we're dealing with church people, is that we have to make sure that we still keep a heart of transparency as well as a heart of love, because that is the greatest gift of them all, as it is told to us in the Bible. And so when we think about what others have gone through, we cannot forget our own story, our own struggles, our own testimony. And I think that's one thing I can tell you, Desiree, even from my own experience, is that's one thing that I can say that had became my strength, is that there were so many people that may have looked down on what I had experienced, even from the sexual molestation that happened to me, and even from different forms of domestic violence that we know sexual abuse is under that. And when people begin to share their story, when people begin, and that's the reason how come the Me Too movement is so not just popular, but it's making a difference in our communities. It's because people are coming out, may it be within the faith-based organization or corporate America or within our arts and theaters. People are coming out saying you are not alone. And I feel that sometimes within church, within our religious platforms, is that we forget to say that part of our testimony. May it be the dark part. We forget to share that experience so that we can set the captives free on such a broader scale.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tonight we are taking a look at the many issues, the many difficult, highly personal issues surrounding Sexual Assault Awareness Month. If you need resources, if you need help, if you know of someone who needs support, resources, assistance, or if you're just trying to become more informed about sexual assault and recovering from it, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Of course, we're going to continue to take your phone calls even after 7:30. Before I get to my break in a couple of minutes, I think it's really important that we get some resources out there. Indira, how can someone reach the DC Rape Crisis Center?
They can reach us through our hotline, which is 202-333-RAPE. They can also go to our website, which is dcrcc.org.
Mm-hmm. What kind of services, briefly, do you offer there?
We provide individual and group counseling to survivors of childhood sexual abuse and adult sexual assault. All of our services are free. We also offer a number of volunteer opportunities. We do training and technical assistance in terms of helping Washington, D.C. build capacity to respond to the need of sexual violence. Additionally, we do public policy advocacy as well as community engagement.
Okay. And any resource you want to share with us, Amina?
Yes, I can be reached at lovebythehandles.org. Also, I do want to give the sexual assault 1-800 number, 656-4673, 1-800-656-4673, and we can be reached at lovebythehandles.org. And we focus really on helping our survivors. They may have been victims, but helping them into being survivors with empowerment discussions, empowerment chats, empowerment workshops, as well as workforce development things to help them from a financial standpoint as well.
And Savannah, anything you want to share with us before the break coming up?
Absolutely. So you can reach Black Women's Blueprint at 347-533-9102. And we offer healing and counseling services, both individual and group. We also have sister circles. We promote healing for survivors not only through Truth and Justice, our human rights framework, but also through various means, the use of art, theater, indigenous formal and informal practices that get at the somatic and body physical issues and the consequences of rape and sexual assault. So So trauma counseling and spiritually based practices that are steeped in ancestral traditions, and also support that is defined by survivors themselves.
Thank you so much. And of course, as always, the phone numbers and the websites for all of our guests will be posted on WHUR.com after the program. Please stay with us as we continue to take a really serious look at some of the issues surrounding sexual assault awareness. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. After the break, we're going to talk to Carlos calling from Maryland, also Tony calling from Maryland. So please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Stay with us. Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking tonight about sexual assault. We're talking to survivors. We're offering resources and support for those who have been through one of those horrific ordeals, no matter when it happened to you, whether it was early in life or very recently. My guests are Indira Henard. She is the executive director of the D.C. Rape Crisis Center. Amina McWhorter, founder of Love by the Handles, and Savannah Brown. She is with the Black Women's Blueprint. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Carlos calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Carlos. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. Good evening. How are you doing this evening?
Doing just fine. Go right ahead.
Okay. This is a very important topic to me because one of my friends did just get raped, and she just told me, and I'm trying to get her to press charges against the guy, but I'm calling to get resources because she's shutting down, and I guess she feels it's her fault. And it did happen in D.C., so I'm happy you got somebody there works in D.C. and stuff like that. So I guess I'm calling to see if I get some resources to pass it on to her.
Let me start with Indira, because this is a really important point. And he just brought up so much, Indira, the legal issue, her feeling emotionally despondent. Mm-hmm. And he said it just happened. So what should he tell her as a friend attempting to offer support?
I think the first thing you need to do is to let her know that it's not her fault, that there isn't anything that she could have done, that she is not alone, and everything that she is experiencing, everything that she is feeling, it is absolutely normal. A person who has been sexually violated can experience a myriad of emotions, from guilt to shame, to feeling numb, to feeling like it's their fault. But if you can continue to be there with her and support her and just remind her, that this is not her fault. Sometimes survivors need to just continue to hear it. What I would also say is let her guide you. Let her be your GPS. I hear that you want to encourage her to press charges. But remember that this just happened. And so she needs some time to figure out what she wants to do. And I think the best thing you can do for her is to continue to be there and support her. And when and if she's ready, provide her with the necessary resources. But I commend you, for wanting to support your friend, and I, you know, just encourage you to do that. But know that this is going to be a long process and a long healing journey for her. There is no timetable on healing. And so just remember that she is in the driver's seat, and she will let you know what direction she wants to go.
Amina, you wanted to share something.
Yes, Carlos.
Hold on for a minute, Carlos. I want to make sure that our panelists have a chance to respond. Go right ahead.
Carlos, please. I want to, just like Indira just mentioned, I want to first thank you for calling in and being there as a friend to your friend, because I can tell you as a survivor, the biggest thing that she needs right now is to know that it really is not her fault, and that you and other people around her definitely believe in what happened to her and that it's not her fault. That is something that was the biggest thing for me, is making sure that I understood, even at the age that I was at, was that it wasn't my fault, and that who would believe me? Who would believe that this really was not something because I wore a certain outfit or because I said something a certain way that I caused this act to happen to me? So I really want to just stress to you that whatever is her time, just like Indira said, but from a survivor's point of view, I'm telling you like never before, that is going to be very important, because whenever she does decide, it could be a year from now. It could be tomorrow. But whenever she does decide that, you should still be there for her.
Savannah, I do want to ask, we know that police departments, big and small across this country, have resources to investigate a sexual assault. But talk to me a little bit about some of the psychological barriers from someone who has been attacked in pursuing prosecution, filing charges. What's going on in their head?
Thank you so much, Carlos, for calling. And yes, this is an excellent question. I agree with what the sisters have laid out. Something to consider when pursuing the legal side of things for survivors is that often survivors feel like they're the ones on the stand, and that they're actually the one at fault. And so sometimes there can be a re-victimization and a re-traumatization when the legal side is pursued. So definitely, as Indira said, let the survivor take the lead and follow her lead. Definitely let her know that you are there for her, that you believe her, that you'll sit with her and you'll be present with her. There's often a need for an advocate if she does pursue something legal in this case. So you want to be by her side and be present in the long run. It's really important to remember, just for you yourself, to remain calm, to listen, to speak with compassion and love, a radical kind of love that this often requires, because survivors, a lot of things are going through our head when we're in the aftermath of rape and sexual assault. And so there's a lot of compassion, communal care, a lot of village work that goes into that. So you want to take the lead of the survivor, because a lot can happen when confronted by police or even in the emergency room. There's a lot of re-victimization and re-traumatization that can happen. And often survivors may shut down. There's 150 consequences or effects and impact that a survivor faces, and those are mental and physical, spiritual, and emotional. So there's all of that that the survivor is holding in addition to the truth that they bear around their story. So you want to be as gentle as possible in this moment, in this very, very sacred time for the survivor.
And we have to also keep in mind, too, to her point, is that a lot of times the predator can also be very manipulative. And so what we may think that as a victim moving into a survivor is that it's really us. The predator can make us think really and play this mind game with us to make us think something even more deeper and serious from an emotional and a mental point. And so we have to add that mm-hmm. into this, you know, dynamic of the healing process, too, of what has played on our minds, you know, to make mm-hmm. us feel that this is even more, you know, our fault, even from a larger point of view.
Carlos, thank you so much for giving us a call. I appreciate you.
I totally agree with everything that you're saying, ma'am, with the panels. My question is, how do I get her resources to get help? I can talk to her, hug her, pray with her, and everything. But we all know sometimes that's not enough.
Well, let me share. Well, Carlos, let me, and you may have missed part of the conversation earlier, but there are resources for hotlines. And Indira, please, again, you can share your website with Carlos. And also, Carlos, I want to tell you before we move to our next caller that all of the resources will be on WHUR.com on our website tonight, that you can look them up. But very quickly, Indira, share your website again, please.
Yes, our website is DCRCC.org.
again? I'm sorry, not quite that fast.
Oh,
what machine gets it? Yeah.
Our website is dcrcc.org.
dcrcc.org, and that, of course, is in Washington D.C. And I'm sure there are other resources that they can offer. So again, Carlos, thank you so much, and look to our website for a list of other resources. Let me go to Tony. Tony, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Tony. What's on your mind?
Hi. I just wanted to say that in a church or out of church, women are made to feel like sexual assault is something that they did. But I'm thankful that the panelists did touch on a whole lot on, and they kept emphasizing that it's not the victim's fault. But I just wanted to say that it's not just so prevalent that the people in the church are saying it's your fault, but it's outside the church as well. That's all I wanted to say.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Tony. Thank you for sharing that with me.
Savannah,
how old were you when the incident happened to you?
Yeah, this is really, really personal to me. And I'm a survivor of child sexual abuse. And so my child sexual abuse spans over the ages of 2 to 8 years old. So that actually had a huge, huge impact on mental health, on spirituality, on my emotional health, and dealing with the impact of trauma. It's their lifelong impact to that, right?
How so?
So I really like what Indira said, that there's no timetable to healing, right? It's something that you constantly come back to. It informs my work. It informs my advocacy. It's a part of me. It's a part of who I am and the way that I walk through the world. And so it's really, really critical that when we're talking to survivors, that we're not talking about an incident that happened, but something that they lived through and experienced and recover from over their lifespan.
You spoke about the impact that it had on you. How so? How did it, as you became an older girl, a teenager, a young woman, how did it impact you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely was a part of my education performance. It impacted my relationship with my family and my community. It informed the way that I trust or do not trust particular individuals or institutions. So definitely through and through in all of the facets and areas of my life, rape and sexual assault has informed those parts and pieces of who I am. And I'll agree with Indira and Amina that the victim blaming is definitely a part of that, right? You consider it your fault for years, and you consider it something that you could have changed, and you ask, why did this happen to me? There must be something about me that is wrong, or there must be something about me that made me a target, right? And it's something that you overcome, and that you, as I've come to understand and read and be in communities of sisters and experiencing healing and counseling in my own community, I've been able to unlearn those practices of victim blaming and finding a way to point back to myself and move through light in my journey.
Here's something, Indira, that I'm really curious about. You mentioned individual counseling and group counseling. And in the case of Savannah, she said this was something that happened when she was a child. And with Amina, this is also something that happened when she was a child. And so they were children.
Mm-hmm.
But how about when this happens to adult women and the healing, the impact, particularly talk to me about the impact on husbands or boyfriends when these kinds of things happen to women that have mates, the relationship. What do those mates need to do to offer support?
So I think there's a couple of things. One, we need to know that there's not a walk of life that sexual violence does not impact.
What do you mean by that?
Meaning that sexual violence impacts every walk of life. It affects everybody, whether you're a woman, whether you're a man, every service every service industry, mm-hmm. There's not a walk of life. And so I think when it comes to the healing journey, it is very personal. It is very individualized. Sexual violence does not just impact the survivor. It impacts the family. It impacts the community. You know, in terms of partners and husbands and spouses and wives who may be dealing with a loved one who has been sexually violated, what we have to remember is that healing doesn't just have to happen for the survivor, but it also needs to happen for the family. Mm-hmm. It also needs to happen for the community. And in terms of the buffet of what that looks like, again, that is very individualized. Men do get sexually violated too, and I think that's also important to know. 1 in 6 men are sexually assaulted. 1 in 5 women are sexually assaulted. Every 98 seconds, someone is being sexually violated. Men are not just allies, but they are survivors. And so I think as it relates to healing, what we have to remember is that there is no perfect recipe for what healing looks like for a certain person.
I need to take a break. I'm going to drill down a little bit more on that question. Life after a sexual assault, the road to healing for individuals, for family, support, the whole bit. We'll be back in just a moment. Of course, lines are still open if you have a question, if you have a comment. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment. Sam Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about the issues surrounding sexual assault awareness. Before the break, we were talking about the impact on husbands, boyfriends, significant others, mates, in the event that your mate is sexually assaulted. What should, for example, Indira, what should a man expect or not expect if it happens to, say, his girlfriend, his wife, where they may have had a wonderful intimate relationship before she is attacked?
Well, I mean, again, I think it's important to definitely just uplift that each person is different, but some of the things that we know to be true that are common amongst sexual assault survivors is that there is a change in the intimacy. Intimacy can be delayed. The person who they were before the assault is going to be different than the person who they are after the assault. And that's not necessarily in a bad way. What that means is that this trauma has happened. And so now they have to find a new normal. And so they have to rebuild safety. They have to rebuild trust, not just with themselves, but also with their partners, with their families, with their friends. And so every walk and every part of their life is going to be impacted, including their intimate life, professional life, family life. So again, each person is different. But what we have seen is that there has to be a new foundation built in order to continue to move forward. And again, there's going to be a new normal.
Amina, your thoughts about that. And then Savannah, I want to hear from you as well. Go right ahead.
You know, I do agree with what she was saying. One thing I want to add, though, is, you know, very similar to Savannah, I was a young girl and I was 6. And what I wanted to say very quickly is that I didn't even begin to tell anyone in my family, friends, not even my mother, until I was 25. And I didn't realize that even from that journey from 6 years old to 25, even beyond that, even in my 30s, that I was making very unhealthy choices in relationships because of the fact that I was emotionally traumatized.
What do you mean by unhealthy choices?
That, you know, I wasn't, one, honest with anyone that this happened to me, because it happened with a family friend. Mm. And I didn't know who do I talk to and who would believe me. And then as I became a teenager, you know, if boys are liking me and I'm looking a certain kind of way, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, hey, that's all I'm good for anyway, I guess, because it started such as a young age. And so I wasn't making the best choices because, one, my self-worth was gone. And, you know, another aspect of that is different things that just transpired in my own mind, my own mental, my own emotional space. And so I feel that that's an another important piece to a victim moving into a survivor is that we have to continue to make sure, yes, that they're not alone and that, you know, it's not their fault, but it's okay to talk. No matter how old you are, and to be honest, even in your intimate relationship, that because this has happened, I may not be ready to move into this part of intimacy yet. Because truth be told, I may not even know what's still going on because I haven't talked. I haven't sought counsel, as she said. And those things are important because for me, the emotional peace and the trust and the self-worth is what really played a part to my road to healing. And once I was able to admit that those are parts of my lives that I needed the healing, I was moving into a place of wholeness.
Savannah.
Absolutely. I agree with all that has been said. And this brings up for me this question of, like, what should an intimate partner expect in the aftermath of sexual violence? Well, it reminds me of triggers, right? So triggers are marked by the repetition of memories or scenarios. Mm-hmm. There can be smells or sights or sounds that will remind a survivor of the incident. And so acts of intimacy, right, kissing and hugging and touching, and even some words associated with sex can trigger a survivor back into the moment or into a flashback of the assault. And so it really requires patience and compassion, as I was speaking about earlier, and that radical love that I was speaking about before, because there are those psychological and social impacts of sexual violence, you know, that include withdrawal, trouble concentrating, a lack of arousal is one of those, right? So there's exaggerated startle response, right? There's all of these different changes and patterns for a survivor that might impact their ability to be intimate, not just with their partners, but with their family and in their community, even in their workplaces or places of worship.
I mean, you mentioned something that I was struck by. You spoke about making poor decisions as a teenager, as a young woman. What was it that moved you from making poor decisions to making good decisions? Was there an aha moment for you? Was it, or did it take longer? Was there a process?
It was definitely a process for me. The aha moment, honestly, was that I was worthy. And I realized that.
Who told you that? Or how did you figure that out?
I figured that out because, one, first and foremost, my faith, and with me going to counseling.
Okay.
I was one of those individuals that came from a household that outside of your spirituality, outside of your faith in God, that's it. Just have the faith in God and that will see you through. And please understand that's important. But when I realized that now I'm in my 30s and I'm still dealing with some issues. I'm still not being honest with really what I experienced as a child and then as a teenager. I said, you know, I need counsel.
Even now?
Well, I'm saying, well, I'm over 30.
Oh, but, I thought you were, you look in your 30s. So.
But from that, thank you. But from that perspective, I had to realize that, oh my goodness, I still need help.
Okay.
And this road to recovery has no limit. And when I realized that I needed, and it was okay for me, even as an adult, to still seek counsel, may it be spiritual or clinical, even though this act may have happened when I was a child, I still needed to be healed. And so that was my aha moment, that through counseling, especially amongst the African American community, we still have that taboo sometimes that we don't seek it like we should. But for me, that was my aha moment, as you mentioned, Harold. That was when I was like, you know what? This is serious. And I can, even at this age, start my healing process. Mm-hmm. It's no limit, as Indira mentioned. It's no age limit. It's no time limit. And for me, I was an adult when I really started to say, hey, me too, mm-hmm. in this experience.
Indira, what does counseling for new survivors who have recently experienced a trauma of an assault, what does that look like when they come to the Rape Crisis Center? What happens?
When they come to the Rape Crisis Center, we will do a intake assessment to basically just get a sense of a little bit about their history, a little bit about their trauma, not going into details about the trauma, but getting the necessary information in order to partner with them on coming up with a plan for their healing journey. Again, each person is different. Each individualized clinical treatment plan is going to look different because each survivor brings different things to the table. But what we know is, you know, we are the oldest and the first rape crisis center in the country, celebrating 46 years, and we specifically focus on sexual violence work. And so, you know, we are with clients, we are with survivors from day one in their journey. And what we want them to know is that they are in a safe place, that they are not alone. And again, they are in the driver's seat, and we are partnering with them on this.
Some final thoughts from each of you on this question. The crime is the crime, and the assault certainly is the assault. But is there a better atmosphere, Savannah, for support for women now, as you know, when you have people who go through this?
Yeah, I definitely think that there's some really innovative and even indigenous practices that are out there, right? So one of those is holding circle for sisters, right? So that means sitting, and in Black churches we call it tarrying, which is really a practice of crying out and wailing out and sharing your truth for as long as it takes. And so getting back to that kind of community support, sister circles, healing circles, these are the modalities that we use at Black Women's Blueprint. And it literally means sitting in a circle and being with a sister and allowing her to shed the story, the levels and the layers of the story that are intersecting with her life, that are intersecting with her work, her family, her faith, her community, her ability to parent, her ability to conceive, her ability to create, her ability to manifest in her life. So really looking holistically at a woman's life and allowing her to share out what that is, you know, what that looks like for her, and the ways that she wants to proceed in her healing, whether it's on an individual level or in community or with a certain set of sisters or through a certain processes, whether that be legal or counseling or therapeutic or artistically. So there's a lot of different ways to approach this work and approach the healing journey.
Mm-hmm.
And I just commend the sisters that are on this call and the work that they do and the way that they provide advocacy and prevention and counseling and healing services in the ways that our services also come together with those. So, yes, there are new and innovative and also old and traditional and indigenous practices that we can use to support survivors, to let them know that they are believed, that they are not alone, and that they're in community with folks who are ready and willing to be on their healing journey with them.
She said quite a bit.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure that you all echo what she
absolutely
what she shared
absolutely
with us. We could talk about this for another hour, and I'm quite sure there are some folks out there, men and women, who could use this conversation. Unfortunately, we are out of time, but I want to thank all of you, Indira Hinard, Savannah Brown, and Amina McWhirter for sharing your experiences and resources. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And as always, as I said, these resources will be posted on WHUR.com after the program. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, April 10th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night. The Howard University.